my dad, Daniel Wilson Green, was a Depression-era Midwest kid reared in Taylorville, Illinois, born in 1916. The Greens and the Sabins of Taylorville and nearby towns were a close-knit clan, gathering for all of those Middle America things we think about, the big picnics, the covered dish church meals, which we call potlucks, and just big old family gatherings. Dad starred in the junior play at Taylorville High School, and he was the editor of the yearbook in his senior year. I did not know my dad well when I was growing up because he and Mom were divorced when I was 4. And he was stationed in faraway places like Guam for much of my childhood. Not to mention that my stepmother was not very fond of my father's children, which is to say me and my younger sister, Kate. Even so, he had a huge influence on my life. Kate and I resumed contact with him when I was about 21, after he had retired from the Navy. We loved visiting Taylorville with Dad and his mom, Grandma Dealey, and fireflies, which we don't have out here, unfortunately, and giant cornfields and tons of aunts and uncles and some cousins. He was incredibly supportive. Sneaking a bit behind my stepmother's back, he provided a financial lifeline when I needed to enter an alcohol rehab center in 1982. When I was in seminary between 85 and 88, he sent me an allowance of $200 a month. Very helpful it was, too. He graduated from college a year after I did, and we both went into English teaching. He taught college and I taught high school. He was funny and kind. He loved language. He could make up those things where, you know, able was I, ere I saw Elba, those things that go backwards and forwards the same. He could just, palindromes. He could make those up just like that. It was amazing. He was very happy to have regular connections with his daughters in the last 30 years or so of his life. Although my time with him was during his English professor and retirement years, there was never any question about how central the Navy had been when he was in it and for the rest of his life. There was never any question about how the bonds of service and the bonds of war had shaped him. I learned a lot about the spiritual depths that are plumbed in such bonds, although I think Dad would probably take exception to my characterizing his life as anything so highfalutin as spiritual. Dad joined the Navy immediately out of high school in 1934. He was stationed for 6 years on the USS Nevada, where he met his lifelong friend, Joe Holcomb. Jody was what I always heard Judy's father referred to as. When I was young, my mom would tell me stories of Dad, and Jody's name figured mightily. Dad wasn't a religious man, but the bonds forged among those men during that war, and to some extent among their worried, frightened young wives and families, carried a spiritual significance that many of us cannot truly understand. My father became an officer when he served, a commissioned officer. He had been a warrant officer when he served on the Nevada. So he was reassigned to another ship, as was standard practice. You don't suddenly take authority over your old messmates. You go to another ship where they're not going to question you so badly. In Dad's case, it was a light cruiser called the USS Boise. I'm still puzzled about that. 9 months into this assignment, out in the vast Pacific, young Ensign Green heard the terrible news of the attack on Pearl Harbor, where his young wife and tiny baby lived. Neither he nor Mom heard of or from each other for months, and we, the two of us, my mom and me, were not evacuated until April of 1942. Mom always spoke of those months as terrifying. She would vividly describe the palpable darkness of blackouts in tropical nights. However, with a totally mom attitude, she rented a piano and bought a pair of red shoes. That was mom. Pearl Harbor also began what must have been my father's terrifying time, or at least parts of it. He, like so many, most of these men, did not dwell upon it in their later lives. Indeed, they scarcely spoke of it. So I can only imagine. The Battle of Cape Esperance was a short, incredibly intense battle on October 11, 1942. The Boise sank 6 Japanese ships in that 27 minutes and lost 107 men as 3 gun turrets were completely wiped out. The following month, my dad spoke of it in an Illinois newspaper, modestly, you can read the clipping on the little thing over there, giving credit to his commanding officer, the famous Mike Moran, giving credit to the whole crew, and he disclaimed heroism entirely, saying that he didn't have time to think of much else while the battle fight, think of much else but the battle while the fighting was going on. Like, big deal. You got a battle to fight, you fight the battle. This is what we do. He also lauded the ship's doctor. Many, many men were injured in addition to the ones who were killed. And he said this, he did a great job and didn't lose a man on the trip back to the States. He got the Navy Cross for that job and he sure deserved it. Religion is about death and life. And it is about the people that we meet at our most vivid moments, those who are our partners in this vast enterprise. The brotherhood and sisterhood, the comradeship of war, is a deep religious bond, even if our fathers would probably just smile indulgently at me for saying such a pretentious thing. Now, there's a twist of fate scarcely more odd than Dan's and Jody's daughters, both ending up in Boise, Idaho, both ending up at the Boise Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. On November 23, 1942, Boise Mayor Austin Walker and the City Council signed a document. It had some whereases about how brave the men on the Boise were, especially during the Battle of Cape Esperance, and then it says, resolved that we, the mayor and the common council of Boise City, Ada County, State of Idaho, are honored to confer upon each officer and member of the crew of the illustrious cruiser Boise the title of honorary citizen of Boise City, State of Idaho. I think that's quite amazing. And my dad used to visit me here. And he used to tell people that his honorary citizenship was why I got the job. Forty years after World War II ended, it was around 1986, just before I went to seminary, I got to meet some of those comrades, still knowing each other after all of those years. I lived in Seattle at that time, and my dad lived in California, and there was a USS Nevada reunion in Eugene, Oregon. How very convenient. I got to meet Jody Holcomb, the famous Jody Holcomb, and the three of us had a delightful time. And when I learned that one of his middle names was Deck, I asked him if he was called Poop Deck, to my amazement, and his and Dad's dissolving into fits of laughter, he hadn't been until then. I couldn't believe that nobody had thought of it. The men at that reunion were only in their early 70s at the time, and they could dance my feet off. We had a great time. Some of them, of course, had died by then, and they were remembered with fondness and with sorrow. I got to talk to a lot of the men and their wives, all survivors of that great, terrible, matter-of-fact, life-changing war. I had a lot of fun. I learned things about comradeship that I hadn't understood before, and I was touched.
I think our fathers would be pleased to know that their daughters, by either coincidence or destiny, ended up here in Boise, Idaho, and part of this fellowship. Although I've not met Elizabeth's father except as a baby, my father over the years had colorful and affectionate stories about his very good friend, Danny Green. And I'm honored to commemorate Veterans Day by telling the story of my father, Joseph Franklin Deck Holcomb, known to Elizabeth and uniquely her, Poop Deck. My father was born in a poorer district of New Orleans, sort of an Irish ghetto. Both of his parents died before he was 12 of things with modern antibiotics people don't die of today. But various relatives took him in. And during the Depression, he was living with a rather crusty old uncle in Kansas, working as a farmhand for $1 a week. Well, that was manual labor, but on his days off, he would clean up, put on a clean white shirt and tie, wore his hat at a dapper angle, and went into the next door town of Harrington, Kansas, which is where he met my mother. She had just graduated high school as valedictorian of her class, and an older sister had gone to college, but in those times, her parents didn't have the means to send her. So she was working in her father's barber shop for $5 a week. My parents courted, but with their combined income of $6 per week, marriage would have to wait. Dad promised to come back for her, and off he went to join the Navy. He enlisted as a seaman third class, and he had less than a high school education at that point, but lots of ambition. He studied hard for the warrant officer's exam, passed it with the highest grade, and became the youngest warrant officer in the Navy. So he and mother were married, and they were so excited, he had drawn a tour of duty in paradise. Dad was stationed on the battleship Nevada, whose home port was Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. They had a small apartment in Pearl City where he could spend leave, and they were expecting their first child, me. And it was a very idyllic time in their young lives. December 7th, 1941 was a Sunday. Dad was awakened at the apartment by the general quarters alarms. He leapt into his best uniform and ran for his ship. And the rest, as they say, is history. It takes 2.5 hours to file up the boilers of a battleship. The Nevada did it in 45 minutes and was the only battleship to escape its moorage. As it headed towards the sea, it became a target of heavy fire and started to sink right in the narrow channel. Rather than block this channel, they ran the ship aground and continued to fight from there, firing anti-aircraft rounds while putting out multiple fires. In the chaos, My parents had no way of knowing what had happened to each other. Bombs had also dropped on Pearl City. There were blackouts, and Elizabeth's mother experienced that. All means of communication were co-opted for military use. No texting or iPhones then. But then, after 3 days, Dad returned to the apartment, his uniform torn to rags and covered with oil, but alive. And Mother and her cargo were alive. Others were not so lucky. Shipmates died on the Nevada, and my mother's cousin died on the Arizona. I only know all of this from accounts by my mother and books. I don't recall a single occasion of my father speaking of his wartime experiences. President Roosevelt said of this generation that they had a rendezvous with destiny, and in their case, destiny had met up with them. Pregnant women were among the first evacuations, and Mom was sent home to Kansas, where I was born, waited out the long separation of the war, and my dad spent the rest of it in the Pacific. Some of the story is told in the collage on the display easel. I painted the portrait of my father as a young officer. He shipped the Nevada, and Mother and baby Judy are in the story, too. If a man is in the military, so is his family. He did have further sea duty after that. He was sent overseas during the Korean War. But after that, his duties were places where his family could live. And he was a steady presence in our life. Dad was always proud of his time in military service. The Navy gave him his start in life. With little education, he rose through the ranks and retired after 20 years a lieutenant commander. He had 2 years of college on the GI Bill, which were among the happiest of his life. And that and his military training were an entree to a second career in the aerospace industry building moon rockets. But as he looked over his time of military service, his most endearing memories, and of which he did speak, were of the lifelong friendships that he had made, the powerful bond of men who had truly become brothers. He and Mom were married 56 years and raised 4 children. They shared a determination that their children would be educated, and all of us did achieve a college degree. We lost my dad in 1998 to lung cancer, but I was glad he lived long enough to see his children well established. He was a great influence in my life, perhaps the greatest. And I see the best traits of my parents now in the family's generations, sisters and brothers, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Dad, for all of the accomplishments of his life, Dad always said that his proudest achievement was the raising of his children. We lost my mother 3 years ago. She left a letter for each of us telling us our stories. I'm glad now to have the chance to tell theirs. I selected a reading, which Elizabeth has kindly agreed to read for me, an excerpt from Tom Brokaw's book, The Greatest Generation. It describes better than I could my parents' lives and times, but it's also meant as a tribute to the younger generation of returning veterans. They now need medical care and educational and job opportunities to build their own future as my parents did and to become the next greatest generation. Thank you.